Pawscast. Thank you for having me, Joe.
Hi, welcome to the Pawscast. I am Joe Poznanski, and with me is Michael Schur. Michael, welcome.
Joe, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You know, I want to start off very, very quickly with a question I have for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a specific podcast question. Yesterday, I was on NPR's All Things Considered to talk about the Cleveland ridiculous 21 game winning streak, which we will discuss a little bit later in the show. But anyway, I was on there, which was nice. It was great to see baseball kind of get, you know, a little bit of love in the NPR, you know, non-sports community. It was great and all that. Did the show. Somebody then tweeted to me, and you maybe, but definitely to me, saying this, and this is the proposition I have for you. His thought is that NPR's All Things Considered is exactly the opposite of the podcast. That we are truly a diametric opposite.
Wait, this is an incredible theory. I love this theory. I mean, let's break it down right away. They are All Things Considered. We are one thing considered, for all intents and purposes. I mean, we dabble in like occasional ancillary nonsense, but yeah, Mostly it's baseball.
Right.
Second of all, they're an incredibly professional and well-run organization.
Exactly.
They're really good at what they do. They plan things really carefully. They execute the show to perfection every single day. We do none of those things. I mean, this is a great theory. I love this theory. It's the inverse of the podcast. It's -1 over the concept of the podcast.
I think that's right. I think yeah. It's and that is the mathematical equation right there. -1 over the podcast.
I think that's right.
100% right. All right, I'm glad to see you agree with that. All right, so we start off as we always do. By always, I mean like the last two of them, with our Tommy Pham update.
That's right. We are huge. We are huge fams.
We're fams, and we have music for the Tommy Pham update.
Now, I don't want to oversell this. You sent this to me earlier today. It was written for us by a listener of the podcast,
David Von Kampen, from Nebraska, sent in this Tommy Pham musical update.
Now, I don't want to overhype this.
Okay.
But I believe it is the single greatest piece of music ever composed and recorded in America.
And you know I'm with you. With you. So let's hear it.
It's the Tommy Pham update.
Now, that's the greatest song ever.
I don't know what's... I mean, okay. Let's see what's better than that that's ever been recorded in America.
In America.
You would say Born to Run, probably.
Born to Run. Yeah, I would think so.
I would say, like, I'd say there are some, like, I'd say Hamilton. Let's say Hamilton. Hamilton's better.
Sure.
But
Johnny B. Goode.
The list of songs or pieces of music that are better than that is very small. You can count them on one hand.
One hand. I think we would agree. David Von Kampen, you're a genius. Thank you for the music. What is our Tommy Pham update? Where are we?
So basically, and as everyone knows, and we are following closely Tommy Pham's quest to have a 300, 400, 500 season. 300 batting average.
Do you think he knows he's on this quest?
Does he know? No, he has no idea. Oh, does he know that he... I thought you were asking, does he know that we are tracking him?
No. Does he know that he's on this quest, this 300, 400?
No, I doubt it. I mean, unless he's like a big sabermetrics guy, which I kind of doubt. But... maybe someone pointed it out to him. I doubt it. I highly doubt it. My guess is, if anything, he's thinking about whether he's going to hit 300. That's probably, that would be there. Or whether he's going to hit 20 home runs. He has 19 right now. But as of today, up to the minute update, which is totally worthless because this won't be posted for many more minutes from now. Up to the minute update, Tommy Pham tonight is so far as 0-for-1 with a walk. He is at 304, 407 OBP, and 512 slugging. So if the season ended today, he's got it. In fact, he's given himself a little cushion. He's got basically 5 points of batting average, 6 or 7 of OBP, and 12 of slugging. He has a tiny little cushion here heading into the final, whatever it is, 18 games of the season.
It's staggering. Look, I think he's going to do it. We've said this. I feel very, very optimistic and positive based on a lot of sabermetric study of him, right?
That's right.
You know, studied him, studied the pitchers he's going to face. You know,
we've broken down his swing. We've looked at the ballparks he's playing in for his last 18 games and how they're tailored to his his hit scatter plot.
And I think we can say we think he's going to do it. I mean, we can project.
Right now, we can project. That's right. We're projecting that there's a 71% chance that Tommy Pham has a 300, 400, 500
which
season.
Which we feel good about. We feel good.
I feel very solid with that prediction, yeah.
By the way, one other thing about Tommy Pham, just purely from a numbers perspective, he has 19 stolen bases. I mean, there's like a power-speed thing going with Tommy Pham.
He's going to be a 2020 guy in all likelihood. He's got one more homer and one more stolen base in him, I would guess. And he also has 18 doubles, so he could be the famed, always discussed 2020 guy. Of a guy who has 20 doubles, 20 homers, and 20 stolen bases.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never heard that. But
you've never heard that? It's a very famous thing in baseball, 20-20-20.
Yeah. No, but you know, what we're saying is that, you know, Tommy Pham is having a fantastic. We're Pham-ness. I mean,
we're huge Pham-ness. And by the way, it should be noted, the Cardinals are two games out of a playoff spot. Like the Central is anything but wrapped up right now. The Cubs are, I believe, the Cubs have a two-game lead, right? So and right now they're tied with the Mets, and the Cardinals are down 1-0 to the Reds in the third. But this is like, you know, there's still a couple races. The AL East race is going to go down to the last week in all likelihood. The NL Central race, some of these races have been out. Even the Dodgers losing 100 games in a row, they've still got the West wrapped up. But there are two really good races left. The AL East and the NL Central are still really good, and we're gonna get some exciting September baseball. I'm very excited about that.
I just can't believe the Cubs. It just doesn't matter how many times you say, hey, they got it together. They never have it together.
No.
I mean, not this year.
What a weird year. This is a really weird year. I mean, certain things have gone exactly the way we thought, right? And this is probably, by the way, preface this by saying, this is probably true of every year.
Sure.
But certain things have gone exactly the way we predicted. The Indians, it took a little while, but it's basically gone the way we thought. The Nationals has basically gone the way we thought.
Right.
The Dodgers has basically gone the way we thought, even though the details of how it's gone are weird. The Red Sox has more or less gone the way we thought, although they're hitting way worse and their defense is way better, but they're ending up in the same
spot.
Place we thought they'd be. But the Cubs, what is going on? The Cubs has not gone that way at all. Nobody predicted this out of the Diamondbacks, you know, winning 13, 14 straight games, whatever it was. It's been a very weird, odd year. I believe we did talk about the Twins being a sort of sleeper team, but I don't think anybody predicted the Twins would be in wild card contention this late in the year. It's what makes baseball great.
It is. No, I mean, it really is. I just think when you look at the best teams, to me, like, there are whatever, six teams in baseball that are, in my view, you know, a notch better than everybody else. And then, you know, among those six teams, it's you know, it's questionable who's the best of those six, whatever. But I always thought Boston, Cleveland, Houston made it very clear early in the year.
Sure.
Even if you were, you know, wondering how about them coming into the year, early in the year they showed they had enough pitching. They're one of the six. Washington, the Dodgers, and the Cubs. And of those six, five are playing more or less how you thought they were going to play. And the Cubs have at times played that way. And look, they're 12 games over 500. I mean, they're not, you know, in the tank or anything, but they just can't quite get it together. It's really weird. It's really strange.
It is. They should be so much better. And they, like the Red Sox, are having a bunch of guys just not hit, just flat not hit. Like I mean, their pitching has also been, you know, below what it was last year, but they just have both the Cubs and the Red Sox have these guys who should have 850 OPSs in the like 720 range. And it's, you know, it's, as a Red Sox fan, it's infuriating. And I feel like if you're a Cub fan, it's infuriating, but you have last year to always make you feel better.
Right. No, that's right. And look, once they get in the playoffs, you and I both know it doesn't matter. I mean, none of this stuff matters.
Doesn't
right?
matter. And frankly, do you want to see that team in the playoffs? I don't.
No,
if I'm the Nationals, even if I'm the Dodgers, I really don't want to see that team. Like that has that, you know, there was that Yankee team that one year in their run. I think it might have been the 2000 team. Maybe it was the I can't remember. I think it might have been the 2000 team where like they lost something like 12 of their last 15. Do you remember that?
Right.
They lost, like, they went up, they were just, they ended up with like 87 wins and they won the East because everybody else was terrible. And then they just steamrolled everybody in the playoffs and won the series again for the fourth time.
That's right.
But the Cubs do have a little bit of that feeling to me. I don't know why. It's just anecdotal, I guess. But they have the feeling of like a sleeping giant that like they might wake up and be a real force in the playoffs.
I want no part of them. I mean, that's, it's just, you know, there's something also about them and Cleveland, and let's talk about Cleveland here, but there's something about both of them being in the World Series, playing in that incredible World Series, and so emotional and such a great series, that the season starts, a new season, and it's sort of like, we got to go through all of this again just to get back to where we were.
Right.
And I thought both of them played with, you know, like kind of in a lull. They were just, you know, they weren't bad. Neither one was bad. But I think Cleveland in June was just two or three games over 500. The Cubs have, you know, bounced up and down all year. And it just felt like once they get in the playoffs, like, okay, yeah, let's start now. You know, all that matters is us getting to the play. Kind of an NBA.
I was about to say, it's like the NBA teams. Yeah, yeah. Like, it's like once after the All-Star break, they're like, all right, we'll start paying attention now.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if you can do that in baseball, but it feels like that's sort of what they were. So that's why I think the Cubs, even though I've been one of those people who every time they win two in a row, like, okay, all right, finally the Cubs are back, and they're not back. They've just been mediocre, really. But I still think they're a big, big time danger in the playoffs.
Rip to left, Chisenhall coming on, slides, he made the catch, ball game. Mark it down, folks. History on September 13th of 2017. The Cleveland Indians have set a new American League record, winning their 21st consecutive ball game.
It's impossible. It's impossible to win 21 baseball games in a row in the major leagues. It's impossible. And the thing that blows my mind, and I've written about this three or four times now, but I still can't get my arms around it, is they haven't just won 21 games in a row. They've won every game, like, easily. They have not been challenged in any game in this streak. They have been behind four innings the entire streak. That's out of 189 innings. They have trailed at the end of four innings. And even that, as I put in the piece, even that's not 100% true, because twice in New York and in Chicago, they fell behind. They were there, so the home team batted, and the Yankees took a one-run lead. The White Sox took a one-run lead. The Indians tied it with their next at-bat. Like they were leading for like 9 minutes before Cleveland tied it and then took the lead and then swept. So really the entire streak is really they've been behind for a whole inning, for like a full inning once in this entire crazy streak. I mean, it's insane. And all the numbers, them hitting 41 home runs and allowing 35 runs, and the fact that they're slugging .556 as a team. I mean, that's Frank Thomas's slugging percentage as a team during this streak. It's nuts. Have you ever seen anything remotely like this?
No, of course not. And as you wrote a piece about it, and you pointed out, it's so much more dominant than any of the other streaks that are like this. It's way more dominant than the A's streak of a few years ago, as chronicled in the movie and book Moneyball. Right. In part because, you know, that A's streak, and this is what I remember from that A's streak, it seemed like they were winning every game in the ninth inning. Like, they had their last three victories in that streak, walk-offs.
Yeah,
and so their streak had more of a sense of like magic to it. Like, it felt more like there was like pixie dust sprinkled all over that disgusting pit of a stadium that they play in. Whereas the Indians are just suffocating people. They're just like, they seem to be. You know, it's the exact opposite of what the Dodgers are doing, which is to say, when your team is losing 8, 9, 10 games in a row, when you get to the game starts, you blink and it's 4-0. You're losing 4-0. Like, it just, it's what happens when you're going that way. When the Red Sox collapsed in 2011 during the famous fried chicken and beer or whatever it was that season, that's what was happening as they collapsed. It was like, you would just, I would turn on the game and it would be the top of the second and they'd be down 5-1 or 5-0. You kept expecting there to be one pitcher who would get you out of the first inning without giving up a run. It just never happened. Like, Beckett went out, got shelled. Lester went out, got shelled. These guys, it's, and it's what's happened with the Dodgers too. And the Indians are the exact opposite of that. Today, Jay Bruce had a 3-run homer in the bottom of the first inning after they had gone down 1-0. And it was like, we're not going to stand for that. You think we're going to be behind at the end of this inning? You got to be crazy. They just seem so invincible. And Lindor, we've talked about Lindor. He's one of our favorite players. He's part of the funnest player bracket, which we'll get to later. Lindor has 30 home runs this year. He's a shortstop.
He's a shortstop
who has 30 home runs and is one of the best fielding shortstops in the game. And it's like all these guys, it's like they were just lying dormant for a really long time, and then they all woke up at the exact same moment and decided to rip off 21 straight wins. And people kept saying, when's this going to end? When would you bet? Look at their schedule and tell me when they're going to lose. Wow. Obviously, they could lose tomorrow. It happens all the time in baseball, but it's now gotten to the point where they seem like they will never lose again.
Well, that's right. I mean, here's the thing that strikes me. Every time something cool like this happens, so it's a long hitting streak, a long win streak, even a long losing streak, whatever it is, you'll like start checking in. And when you check in, like, oh, it's a third inning, nothing's happened, or they're down a run, oh, can they come back, or you know, oh, he's 0-2. They're always up when you check in. Like, you check in, they're up 4-1. It's the second inning. They're always up. And that's because the first two innings, they've outscored their opponents. I put this thing 59-10 during this streak. In the first two innings, they're averaging almost 3 runs in the first two innings during this streak. I mean, they're just like, oh, we're not playing. I mean, and of course they've thrown 7 shutouts during this streak, which, as I mentioned, is more than like 7 teams all year have thrown.
They have so many starting pitchers who have like 15 or 16 wins. Like, they have, it's getting into the late 60s, early 70s Orioles. Like, it's like every one of their pitchers is going to win 20 games because they never lose. And their pitchers are going, 7 2/3 and giving up 1 run and 4 hits every single time out. It's absurd. And it's really like, it's so fun. I really hope it carries over into the postseason. It would be really fun to watch this team just Golden State Warriors it up in the postseason for a while. Ultimately, obviously, you want a competitive World Series. You want an Indians-Dodgers or Indians-Nationals series where they these two titans collide and you get what you got last year, like a 7-game thing. But I kind of want to see them roll. I want to see this team roll because they're so fun to watch.
But you and I both know they don't have to roll at all. They could lose the first round. I mean, that's baseball. I mean, that's what's so crazy. They asked me on NPR. They said, oh, well, what does this mean? I mean, does this put them in great position in the playoffs? And I'm like, they get home field. I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, there is nothing that really crosses over. I mean, obviously, it's nice to have this, to know you can play at this impossibly high level. And look, they've got great players, and they're doing it without Andrew Miller, without Michael Brantley, without, a couple of guys. So, I mean, they go in fully confident, but, I mean, you tell me there's not a team. They're going to play the wild card team now, which is amazing. Obviously it can still switch. But right now they have the number one seed. They pass the Astros, which is insane. So they played the number one seed. You're telling me the Yankees couldn't come in and beat them? Of course they could. I mean, so that's where it gets really strange. This is all so wonderful, and yet, like, the slate is absolutely blank. And actually, David Schoenfeld of ESPN sent us a Twitter question along those lines, which I will which we'll get to in a little bit. You mentioned the Dodgers, first of all. That's every bit as weird as this Cleveland thing, right?
It might be weirder.
I just, what happened? You're there. What happened?
It's very hard to tell. I mean, they had a couple guys go down with injuries. You know, they lost Bellinger for a while. They obviously had lost Kershaw for a while. Although when they first lost Kershaw, they were playing fine. They were cruising. I honestly think, and this is like it sounds like a cop out answer, I honestly think that it's a fluke, and I don't mean it's a total fluke. Like it's all bad luck. I just think they were incredibly lucky. They were a very, very lucky team for a long time in the way in which they bunched hits together at crucial moments. They had a bunch of walk-offs. They seemed to have a different hero every night. They'd call someone up from the minors, and that guy would have a game-winning hit in the 14th inning of a game. They were just, everything was sort of going their way in the way that these things sometimes do with these like team of destiny kind of situations. And like watching them play, like, they just kind of got beat up. Like they faced a bunch of hot teams. That's the other thing. In this like 15 out of 16 losses, they faced the Diamondbacks six times, and the Diamondbacks were the Diamondbacks were every bit as hot as the Indians were.
Yes, that's right.
And the Diamondbacks just tore through them. And so there's six wins right there, six losses for the Dodgers right there. They also faced the Rockies, who were playing pretty well, and the Rockies are a really good team.
Yes.
And the Rockies have good hitters, and like, look, is it like, you know, the craziest thing in the world that Nolan Arenado hit a three-run homer off you? And like, no, it's
no,
not. It's
no.
And I mean, they additionally, though, and you have to say, like, this is where it gets suspect, is they dropped an entire series to the Padres. Like,
right.
They've also been beaten by terrible teams. Although it then should further be noted that the Padres then went on and played a bunch of other teams really tough after they left the series with the Dodgers. So I think it's like, it's hard not to want to panic if you're a Dodger fan, and as my son is, my jerk son who betrayed me is a Dodger fan. And he's like, it got so bad that last night he went to sleep before the end of the game because he's nine. And I told him I would write on there's like a wipe off board that we write, you know, like,
yes,
remember to bring down your socks kind of thing on his wipe off board. And I was like, I will come in and I will write the winner of the game. And I, like, he woke up this morning, the first thing he did was check the ticker tape, and was so relieved, just because it was like that. He's losing his mind. And
sure.
The only thing I can say is that I'm sure there are a lot of reasons for this that are one thing or another, but I don't see personally like how their flaw has been exposed, or how the league has figured them out in some way. I think they had a bunch of guys who were really hot at the same time, and they were 91 and 36, and then a bunch of those guys went really cold. Cody Bellinger wasn't going to hit that way forever, neither was Justin Turner. They just went a little bit cold at the wrong time, and they lost a bunch of close games. You know, there's a bunch of 1-2-3 run losses in there. They weren't like losing 23-0 every game. So I think it's weird. I think it's a fluke. I think that if you were a mathematician about this, you would say, I have more confidence in the team through its first 130 games that was, you know, 55 games over 500 than I do in like a team that hit a rough patch for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. So I feel like they're going to be okay. They still have one of the best pitching staffs and one of the best relief corps in the league. They still have a bunch of guys who can mash. They hit a bunch of home runs. Like, they're a good fielding team. They have a good outfield defense. Like, I feel like they are going to be fine when they get to the postseason. That doesn't mean they'll win. It means that they still should be favored in their first round wild card matchup. And I think they'll be okay. I think they're going to go deep into the postseason. I can't imagine they don't get to the NLCS.
No, I agree. I agree with everything you just said. I think that, yeah, sure, you panic. You have to. I mean, you don't play that bad of baseball without creating some kind of panic. But let's take a breath and realize, as horrendous as they've been, they're winning the division by 10 games. They've got home field advantage by like 5 games. I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm not saying that this was a huge part of it, but when everything's going your way and you're so far ahead and there's nothing to play for, I'm not saying you want to go ahead and lose that many games in a row, but, you know, you manage the game differently, you play the game differently, everybody's kind of in a different mindset, in a different zone, and you know, you're just not that hungry anymore. I just don't think, I mean, you know, you're already looking ahead to the playoffs. How can you not be, at least to some degree? And then your point about them being, you know, about them being a little bit lucky, they were a little bit lucky on a lot of levels, including on the, you know, runs scored and runs against level. I mean, they were not that good. They're certainly not this bad. I think you look at the middle, and that's where they are. I mean, look, a 93-52 team that's probably going to win 100 games, even with all this other stuff going on, that's who they are. I mean, I think they're a great team, and I still pick them to win the National League. I mean, nothing I've seen the last couple of weeks has changed, other than I will say the one thing that would concern me a little bit is that number two starter situation. Obviously, they got Darvish, and that's a big deal. But, you know, Alex Wood has not been good, just not been good. And that was a guy that I think they were – I mean, first half of the year, he was about as good as anybody. And you know, so I think that you could have a couple of pitching issues here and there. But I still think they're great. Let's go over our funnest player bracket. We are down to our final four in the funnest player draft, and those polls will be up shortly over on MLB.com and also on my Twitter at Jay Poznanski. So here's how it went. Here's how it went. So we're down in the Michael Schur bracket. we have an upset, a big upset, I think, in the Michael Schur bracket. So your number one seed was Jose Altuve,
right?
Who's a fantastic number one seed. He lost. He lost in the round of eight to Bartolo Colon, 52-48 percentage. Very disappointing. Very, very disappointing.
I get it. Like, I understand. I understand. I think it's wrong. I
think,
like,
it's wrong.
Bartolo is like the flashy choice, right? He's like, I get why he's fun, but like, I feel like his fun. The way in which he's fun, we know it already. It's a known quantity. We've talked about it a lot. I feel like the true winner of this should have been Altuve. And it's also a little East Coast bias, I think, is getting in there. People haven't seen Altuve play. If you've really watched Jose Altuve play, he is a more fun player than Bartolo Colon.
I think so too, but you know what? The people have spoken. I mean,
it's a democracy. You know what I mean?
Democracy, it's how we do it. He will face the number two seed who made it through the bracket, and that's Javi Baez, who beat Bryce Harper 55-45. So Colon, Baez, quick prediction.
That's fair. Bartolo, the fact that Bartolo knocked off Altuve meant nobody's stopping Bartolo. At this point, Bartolo is the favorite to win it all, I think.
Wow.
Don't you think? He's definitely going to beat Baez, I think. If he gets to the final, nobody's stopping him.
I think that the Cubs Baez fanhood might be enough. We'll see. That's going to be an interesting one. All right, in my bracket, the number one seed lost as well. The number one seed was Giancarlo Stanton, who was swamped by Francisco Lindor. Which, you know, I mean, I can't argue that Giancarlo Stanton is necessarily more fun than Francisco Lindor. I think they're both incredibly fun people, players, and I love Lindor, so I'm happy with that. But I was surprised. I will admit, being a little bit surprised. That's
a little surprising. Yeah.
A little bit surprising. My number two seed did get through as well, who is Adrian Beltre, who I think is going to win it all. So I think it's going to come down to Beltre and Lindor. I know it is. And Colon and Baez. So those are going to be your two matchups to get us to our championship game. Very exciting Final Four. Hoping to get Jim Nance involved somehow.
Jim Nance should present his tie to the winner of the funnest.
Oh, the funnest player. Exactly.
But not explain why. He should just like run up to the guy after a game, and throw his tie to him, and then just run away. And it would be very
confusing.
Have someone film it like on an iPhone video, like from behind a parked car.
I would love that. I'll see if I can get Jim on board. Great. All right. Well, we are about to go on to our, what I think is our favorite segment, our listener favorite segment. Before we do that, I think you have something to read to the people, Michael.
You know, I'm not going to read this. I'm just going to speak from the heart. Okay. This isn't like planned out. No one wrote this for me.
Right.
This is just totally off the cuff. This is just my thoughts on something I've been thinking about a lot. I want to take a moment to tell you about the Cut Forecast, Joe.
Okay.
The Cut Forecast is the podcast from the staff of MLB.com's Cut 4 section, which focuses on the lighter side of baseball. If you've made it this far into our podcast, we really think you'll enjoy it. It'll make you laugh, and you might even learn something about baseball dogs or ballpark food. Last week's episode made sense of Justin Verlander in an Astros uniform, and then debated how the 9 U.S. Supreme Court justices would line up on a baseball diamond. If that sounds like something you're into, search Cut Forecast, that's C-U-T, number 4, C-A-S-T, in Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts, and click subscribe. Anyway, now on with the show.
It's so interesting. I've been thinking similar thoughts.
Have you? I mean, it's just, again, like, that's just off the top of my head. It's just something I've been thinking about. I wanted to share it with our listeners. And, absolutely, you know, look, take it or leave it. That was something that was sort of rattling around my brain totally naturally and not at all in a composed manner. And so I just, you know, I thought I'd put it out there.
It was strong. TJ gives it a 75 on the 80.
On the 2080 baseball player rating scale. Interesting. 75. I mean, that's Aaron Judge power, you would say.
That
right?
would be Aaron Judge power. That would be Yasiel Puig's arm.
That's Billy Hamilton's speed. That's basically the highest you can do.
It's about as high as you can go. That makes you a Hall of Famer. Yeah. By the way, we do have to go on to our listener's favorite segment. But before we do, I want to take 1 minute, and I mean literally 1 minute, to talk about the Cleveland Browns. Because
great.
You are a Browns. Well, first of all, we also have music for that, which we will play right now.
No, okay. So earlier we said that the piece of music that had been composed for us about the Tommy Pham update was the single greatest piece of music that has ever been composed inside the nation of America. I was wrong. It's the second greatest, because this is actually the greatest.
By the same man. Here we go.
That's right. Here we go. The Cleveland Browns segment theme song. Go for it.
Let's check in on the Cleveland Browns. How are they doing?
That's as good as it gets.
Here's the thing. It's moving is what it is. You know what I mean?
Really,
it's
does.
Like it has that quality about it where it makes you consider yourself and your place in our nation's history. And it makes you reevaluate society in certain ways. It's a deep internal, it hits you like at a gut level.
No, you're right. It's like seeing all of Hamilton, but in a very, very short period of time. Like,
that's right.
Like,
in 8 seconds.
8 seconds. They reduced Hamilton is what that is.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it, you know, and as a new Browns fan, I think you'll agree with me. Positive week for the Cleveland Browns.
Lot of optimism. A lot of reasons for optimism. Yes, I agree. I have to say, because I don't have the football package anymore, so I can't actually watch the games, but I followed the game online. I'm also whatever. I'm sort of I'm not boycotting the NFL, but I'm not really watching the NFL a lot this year.
We're going to talk about that next week. We're going to discuss our football
our football fandom. Yeah, but I did follow the game, and I gotta say, I was proud of the boys. I call them the boys now because they're my team. I was proud of the boys. They hung in there. They, you know, there is the craziest statistic in sports that I've seen recently is that Ben Roethlisberger is the winningest quarterback at their stadium. Have you heard that?
I have heard that.
I mean, it's like humiliating and awful and everything, but like, it's obviously a tough opponent, an opponent that has beaten the stuffing out of them for years and years and years. And they hung tight. They scored a touchdown late. They converted a 2-point try. They were within striking distance. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you gotta be happy if you're a Browns fan. Like, so many things went better in this game than went in any game last year, certainly. And also, you're missing your number one draft choice. You're missing Myles Garrett, which means your team has every reason to believe it is better. It is a better defense than the one that they showed. And except for Antonio Brown, they gave up something like 102 total yards to people other than Antonio Brown.
Which, you know, that guy is impossible to cover. It's just humanly impossible to cover. I totally agree with you. I first of all, it was exciting to see the Browns have a quarterback in Deshaun Kizer who is promising and hopeful and exciting. That's not happened ever, really, for this Browns team. And so that was exciting. And, you know, the Steelers, that's a terrible matchup for them always. But they hung in there defensively. I thought they played really, really well. Obviously, we were going to do a reading of the Browns' first series because the Browns got the ball to after the kickoff, and then they had a busted play, a running play that lost 4 or 5 or 6 yards. Then the draw play, which is the I'm not even going to have my quarterback throw the ball draw play. Mm-hmm. And then they had a blocked punt that was landed on for a touchdown by the Steelers. So it could not have possibly gone worse. And then, I mean, I just say it, the Browns outplayed the Steelers the rest of the way. I mean, it was really
bizarre. Outscored them and outplayed them, yeah.
I thought they did. I mean, you know, and that Steelers team is obviously they knew they were playing the Browns. I don't think they had their, you know, number one game face on or whatever it is, but very exciting, and we'll keep
one thing to add to this, which I think is a good like early note for my budding Browns fandom is sure. I was following the game on whatever the Gamecast, whatever you call it, I guess it is maybe Gamecast on ESPN's website. And, you know, what happens is, you know, you see a graphic of the field, and there's these little arrows, and when there's a play, you know, you see a little sort of, if there's a pass, you see a little arc of where the pass started, where it ended, and then it'll say, you know, Deshaun Kizer throws, short over the middle to so-and-so for 6 yards or whatever. Right. And for a while, something happened when I was watching the game with the app where I think it was a quirk where, like, they threw deep. The Browns threw deep and gained like 37 yards and flipped from their side of the field to the Steelers side of the field.
Yes.
But for whatever reason, the app or the person entering the information didn't account for the fact that they were now on the Steelers side of the field. So the Browns were like on the 37 of Pittsburgh, and then they like had got like a 13-yard pass and went to the 24. But what happened, what the app was showing happened is that they were starting on their 37 and then ended up on their 24. So it said like Deshaun Kizer passes short over the middle for a loss of 13 yards back to their 24. And I was thinking, what the hell? How did that happen? Was it a bubble screen that where the guy turned around and tried to double back? And then the next play was like, you know, Deshaun Kizer hands off to so-and-so who runs -8 yards to the Cleveland 11. And I was like, oh no, what's happening? Like they're just like going backwards. And at one point, you know, it was said that it was like 3rd and 39 from the Browns' own 7-yard line. And then I finally was like, okay, there's obviously I figured out what had happened, and then, you know, it corrected itself. But the situation was such that I thought he was plausible. Like I thought Browns, yeah, for the watching a Browns game, I was like, yeah, okay, I guess they're just having a really bad offensive series and they've lost, you know, 45 yards on 3 consecutive plays.
Well, I think that's like the Browns programming, right? I mean, that's like they literally like, no, they don't ever gain yards.
Right. So, when it registered as a 40-yard pass, they're like, well, I can't be right. That's they must have actually lost 4 yards, and that's what accounts for the line of
I love that. I love that it only took you 3 plays. I think for most Browns fans, it would take much longer than that to, you know, and they'd be screaming like 3rd and 37. What is this? You know. All right. Our listeners' favorite part of this podcast, unquestionably, is the time where you get to ask us questions. I know they love this, right? They love this.
I have no idea. I wouldn't claim that.
No, I don't think they do love this at all. But I'm going to.
I mean, I don't know that they don't love it. I just know that we have no way of knowing one way or the other.
and really, what are we going to do if they do or don't? I mean, it's not going to change.
Right. We're doing this segment, whether you like it or not. So we can claim. Claiming that you love it makes it. Maybe you'll believe it, right? It's like the big lie.
I'm willing to
just lie.
To do that.
Lie with authority, and people will begin to believe that you're telling the truth.
Mike wants to know if this is specific to me, so I will answer this question. Joe, as a non-watcher, what was your opinion of last season's Game of Thrones? I did not watch Game of Thrones. They want to know my opinion of it. I thought too many dragons. That's what I thought.
Really?
I really did. Mm. I thought too many dragons, and also they killed a lot of people that they shouldn't have killed. That's it. That's all I got.
It's a totally valid opinion. Counterpoint.
You watch it.
Counterpoint, I would say not enough dragons, not enough people died. That's what I would say.
Well, we could argue about that, but
both valid stances.
Both valid stances on the thing. For you, this is specific to you, Michael. The Raw Librarian wants to know, forget 5 years. Is Aaron Judge the poor man's Rhys Hoskins right now?
Ooh, I like that question a lot. Michael, because it disparages Aaron Judge.
Michael said that Rhys Hoskins called him the poor man's Aaron Judge. No, it said that Aaron Judge would become the poor man's Rhys Hoskins in 5 years.
That's right.
Now Rhys Hoskins has 17 home runs. TJ, our producer, is a big Phillies fan. 17 home runs in 33 games. All right. Who would you rather have, Rhys Hoskins or Aaron Judge?
I think I'd rather have Hoskins because I believe Hoskins is younger, right? I mean, the weird thing about Aaron Judge is he's about to turn 25. He's old by like rookie standards. Is he 25 now? He might be 25 now. And I believe Hoskins is younger. I'm not 100% sure.
He might be 26. He was closing in.
Hoskins is 24, says TJ.
No,
so
I meant a Judge.
Yeah, right. See, I don't think he's 26 because I believe Mike Trout, who just turned 26, is older than he is. In any case, I think I'd rather have Hoskins. I don't know. I think Judge, what was proven about Judge halfway through the year is that he has holes in his swing that were exploitable by excellent major league pitchers. His second half, he's had like a whatever. Since the All-Star break, he has like a 700 OPS or something. It's a little higher now, I guess. But, you know, the larger question is how is it that we keep having these guys time after time after time in the next 2 years who come up and set an all-time record for the most home runs in the shortest amount of time? It has happened so many times. Remember Gary Sanchez came up and it was like no one ever got to 8 home runs in fewer at-bats. No one ever got to 12 home runs in fewer at-bats. And then so he did it, and then Judge did it, and then Hoskins has done it. And there's all these guys who they keep coming up and breaking these very old records or fairly old records for, you know, fastest guys to whatever number of home runs. It's really weird, isn't it? It is weird.
I will say players are hitting more home runs than ever,
right?
Ever before, and it's spread out. It's not like during the whatever you want to call the C-League era. It's not like that. It's not concentrated in like five guys hitting 50 home runs or whatever. It's everybody. I mean, the Major League Baseball players in general are hitting more home runs than they hit in 1998 and 2000, 2001, all of those crazy home run years, but other than at this point, Giancarlo Stanton, nobody's going to end up with a crazy home run number, right? Because isn't Aaron Judge like still leading the American League with 39? So I mean, nobody's.
He's at 41, I think. He's just over 40. But yeah, it's right.
Nobody's going to
except for Stanton. No one's. Stanton's got the lead league wide by a wide margin. It's there's a ton of guys. Everyone on the Rays has like 33 home runs, and you've never heard of any of them. But yeah, like they all like there's a ton of guys in the like 25 to 38 range. None of them are on the Red Sox. I should point out to literally none of them. But like there's just a lot of guys league wide who are in the upper 20s or lower 30s.
Mark wants to know if Mike could go back in time and work on any pre-1980 sitcom, what would it be?
Pre-1980.
Yeah, how about that?
Well, Mary Tyler Moore was a big
there
one
you go.
For
sure.
Me. It was a huge inspiration for Parks and Rec.
Yes.
I would also say the Dick Van Dyke Show was an early inspiration.
Love it.
For me, when I was like homesick from school, I remember watching the Dick Van Dyke Show very skeptically home from school because it was in black and white.
That's
and
right.
When you're a kid, you're like, well, this can't be funny. It's in black and white. and laughing really hard and thinking it was great. And those are probably the two. Mary Tyler Moore and Dick Van Dyke, those are probably my two faves from pre-1980, I would say.
How about Rose Marie becoming like a Twitter star?
I know.
Love
it. Fantastic. I love it. It's great. I would also say Taxi would be in the mix, too.
Taxi's great.
Taxi was a wonderful show.
Are you a MASH guy? I mean, is MASH like there or not so much?
I was never a huge MASH guy. I watched it a little when I was a kid. I remember the finale, as everybody does, because it's the only like Super Bowl rated show,
right?
That isn't the Super Bowl to this day. I Hawkeye Pierce was they were wonderful characters on that show.
Yes.
We talked a lot when my friend Dan Gorn and I were directing or developing Brooklyn Nine-Nine. We talked a lot about Andy Samberg's characters being like a sort of Hawkeye Pierce figure. Hawkeye was a sort of inspiration, which is to say, he was a guy who had a tough job and was sort of a goofball, but the goofballness didn't stop him from being good at his job. So we described Andy's character, Jake Peralta, as a sort of Hawkeye Pierce figure. So yeah, that show was obviously wonderful and had wonderful moments and wonderful characters, but it wasn't it didn't like get me down deep.
That was like a big, I mean, that, you know, that was a monster. That was the monster show. And you mentioned Taxi is kind of an underrated show. I'm going to throw out one other underrated show and just see if you agree. And if you don't, you know, feel free to insult me.
I know what you're going to say. I bet I know what you're going to say.
You think you know? You think you know what I'm going to say?
I know, yeah. Are you going to say WKRP?
No, although I do like WKRP. Very good.
WKRP was a like top three show for me for a lot of my youth. It's super underrated. There's the episodes, like the classic episodes that everybody's seen are classic for a reason. The Thanksgiving episode, if you've never seen it, with the turkey drop is the best. It's so funny. There is a lot of really great, there was wonderful characters, great stories. Like the five best, I would put the five best WKRP episodes up against like the five best episodes of like most shows. And I think WKRP would
win. I like that. And you know what? WKRP is right up there. But the one I was going to say is even more underrated. You never hear anybody talk about it. Barney Miller. You think Barney Miller was funny?
Oh, of course. Yeah, Barney Miller was great. Barney Miller was explicitly the inspiration for Brooklyn Nine-Nine, obviously. Like we talked about like... That a lot of the vibe, if you ask, there's been all these surveys where real police officers, real detectives are asked, what is the most realistic cop show of all time? And they overwhelmingly say Barney Miller. They don't say, you know, NYPD Blue or The Wire or whatever, these gritty, you know, cop dramas. They say Barney Miller. And the reason that they give is most of the job of being a police officer, like most of the job of being anything, is sitting around your office and like talking to your friends and being bored. And that's what Barney Miller captured so perfectly, is like, it's a weird job. It's a hard job. It's a dangerous job. But there's also a lot of like, just off boring office politics, you know, like, that's a classic. Great show.
I love that show. All right. Charles wants to know, what's the best grocery store aisle? Yeah.
That's a tough one.
I
mean, temptation is to say the frozen aisle, because that's where you would get the ice cream, right?
Right.
And it's where you would get your parents would get you like frozen vegetables and stuff like that, and you would be nice because you would know that just a little further down the aisle you'd be like, yeah, so it's frozen peas and those looks good. Also, hey, look at this over here, this is interesting, Klondike bars
ice cream
yeah.
over here.
Yeah, but I'm gonna say I actually believe, and I've seen this now play out with my kids, I think the best aisle might be the cereal aisle.
Because
the number of the varieties of cereal and the colors of the boxes and the sort of promise of how many different types of that thing there are, that it, to me, when I was a kid, that was the like, that was the home run aisle. Even though my parents never let me eat any like sugary cereal, I would never allow to have any like Lucky Charms or anything. But that aisle was so colorful and fun and exciting. I think it's the cereal aisle. What do you think?
Well, I love the cereal aisle. Idea for that. I think it is the one, even now when I go down the cereal aisle, which of course now I do get something for the kids, but I never really get a whole lot down the cereal aisle. I do get those feelings of when I was a kid, because I was allowed to get the sugary cereals, which was fantastic. And it was funny because it's like, I had very specific, like, no, I don't want Cocoa Krispies. I want Cocoa Pebbles. Like they're totally different. But you know what's weird? As I've gotten old, and this probably speaks to me getting old, I like the fruit aisle. I mean, it's not really even an aisle. It's
not
like
an aisle, though. I wasn't even considering that as being part of the selection.
If it's not, I don't know what Charles is, particular. I just assume, you know, there's like, at our place, like, it's a corner. I mean, there's like an aisle situation going there. Yeah, if you're going specific aisles, I'll go with the frozen. I think that the frozen is still good and the ice cream. But, you know, great question, Charles. Rendon. I don't know what your name is.
Anthony Rendon.
Anthony Rendon, the third baseman for the Martin, Nationals. Rendon Martin. Which way do you guys put the toilet paper, on the roll with the end hanging from the back or the front? Rendon, I don't know what's wrong with you. That's not a question. You always, without exception, put the end on the front. You never put it on the back. If it's on the back, it's on wrong and must be replaced and turned around and put on the front.
I have a very, very controversial answer to this, like, famous sort of litmus test question.
Yeah.
You want to hear it?
Yep.
I literally couldn't care less. This is one of those questions where people fall vehemently, as you just did, into one of the two possible categories, yep, and people defend their choice as the only possible right choice.
True.
I am a person, it should be noted, as you might know about me, who tends to have very strong opinions of very, very stupid and meaningless things, like peanut butter and jelly sandwich making, etc. In this case, I don't care. I have yet to find the advantage either way. I think I've thought about it. I thought about which I liked better, and I came to the inevitable conclusion that it couldn't matter less.
Okay,
and
so if you are replacing the toilet paper at your house, which I hope you do as a good husband, mm-hmm, you'll literally, whatever way it pops up, that's how you
whichever
do it.
Way it pops, yeah, whichever way.
You know what it is, though? It's like you're a baseball switch hitter. Like, you can handle both ways.
There you
ways.
Go. You I like that take. That's a great take. I'm a switch hitter. Yeah, I can go. It's not that I don't care. It's that I can care just, equally much say, about both about you, both versions.
You can roll the thing either way. It's, I mean, that which I respect. Yeah. No, it has to be in the front. You're just wrong. Mark wants to know, and I'm using this as an excuse to get you to do what you're supposed to do every show. What baseball player has the most NBC The Good Place points?
Ooh.
It's a good question, but you know why I asked you that question. So you could tell people.
So I can tell people that the hour-long season 2 premiere of The Good Place premieres September 20th at 10 after the America's Got Talent finale, and then it goes through its regular time slot, which is Thursday at 8:30 the following week for episode 3.
Binge-watch the first season, people.
You must watch the first season in order to understand what the heck is going on in season 2. Season 1, yeah. Which baseball player? Well, that's a good question. I mean, all time, it's pretty obviously Jackie Robinson, I would say.
Yeah.
I can't imagine anyone would beat Jackie all time, right?
I don't think so.
Am I missing anybody?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It depends if you're going to count people in the Negro Leagues or, you know, some of the other, you know, I mean.
Right. Buck O'Neill. Sure.
Buck O'Neill, certainly.
Buck O'Neill, sure. Yeah. I mean, you might say if it's executives too, you might get Branch Rickey in there,
sure,
but who,
sure,
but who knows? I don't know enough about him. I think currently it's going to be someone who provides a lot of joy for people and has no skeletons that we know of in his closet. So it's going to be one of your, and there's also the sort of man of the year type guys. Curtis Granderson is a guy that everybody, I was thrilled that Curtis Granderson went to the Dodgers, because now I get to kind of root for him with my jerk son who betrayed me. Because he's a guy that everyone universally is
love
like
him.
That guy's the best teammate, wonderful guy, like wins all these humanitarian awards, all that stuff. I would say, like, you know, it's going to be one of those guys right now, like J.J. Watt in oh, if you open it up to athletics, like raising $30 million for flood victims. It's going to be one of those guys who just has this kind of like, you know, essentially, at least that we know of, a clean record in terms of like all of the trouble that you can run into as a athlete and as a wealthy person in America, and who then goes above and beyond and does a lot of, like, you know, outreach stuff and humanitarian work and stuff like that. So probably right now, let's go with, at an active roster, let's go with Curtis Granderson.
And I would say, if you're including all of baseball, not just players, it's obviously Theo Epstein, right? I mean,
that's a great point. Yes, because of what he has done, the way that his joy, that his actions have brought joy to millions and millions and millions of people. Like, yeah, and for that matter, like Dave Roberts is probably up there pretty far, right? Like,
absolutely.
manager of the Dodgers in a year that's given a lot of pleasure to LA and Dodger fans, and then also that stolen base for the Red Sox. Like, he's got to be up there. No, Theo, in all of baseball, it's probably Theo. Yeah.
I think so. That's a great
call.
Question. Great question. Richard wants to know, from the movie Princess Bride, did Buttercup throw herself down the hill or merely trip running after Wesley? Which is just a great question.
It's a wonderful question. It's a thing that if you watch that movie over and over and over and over again,
as we all
it is a huge, it's a gigantic weird like flaw in the movie.
It is.
Because what happens is, so she throws him down the hill. He gets distracted. She throws him down the hill. As he's rolling down the hill, he says, "As you wish." She realizes it's Wesley. She says, "Oh, my sweet Wesley, what have I done?" And then it cuts weird, really awkwardly. It cuts to looking back up the hill as her stunt double, as Robin Wright pens, or Robin Wright's stunt double is herself rolling down the hill. What I always assumed happened was she started to run after him and just went down, and she then rolled down. That she didn't fling herself down. I feel like she would have tried to remain upright and go down the hill, but then the hill is very steep, which, by the way, it isn't even that steep, really. But she went to run and then tripped on her long dress or something, and then rolled down the hill. Is that your read on it?
Yes, 100%. She actually has like a little ooh, like she fell, like clearly she fell. So I don't believe there was any. There's no way. And look, and this guy apparently is having an argument with his wife, and I don't want to get him in trouble. I don't know which side he's on or whatever. She didn't fling herself down the hill. No way. No.
I don't see why you would. That's the thing. I can't find the argument for why she would have intentionally flung herself in a rolling fashion down the hill.
But then she did do that very acrobatic roll thing at the end. Of the when she gets toward the bottom of the hill, she like does somersaults over and over again. So
you mean her stunt double does somersaults?
I've always thought Robin Wright is very athletic.
You think she did her own stunts in that
She's
movie?
Very
yeah. Sure. You know what's very funny in that movie is when they're in the fire swamp.
Sure.
She's walking along. She takes a step and there's like the fire pit the fire pot or whatever that explodes. And then her dress catches on fire.
Yes.
And if you look at where she's standing, she's probably 8 or 10 feet away from where the fire explodes, and her dress just catches on fire. And it's one of those things where like you could get away with that in 1987 or whatever it was, because nobody like had a high definition TV screen, and then you know it just flew by you. But yeah, she's really far away from that fire explosion.
By the way, I always have loved the way he put that fire out. He kind of just like flipped her dress around a little bit, and then the fire was out. I always thought
he sort of folds up her dress, and he sort of like just flaps at it. And she's very calm and very dashing, and yeah.
I love that movie so much. Sean asked the question that we've actually answered, but I love the way he phrased this, so I will ask it for Sean. Assuming the Indian streak is still ongoing when this podcast airs, how bad are the Dodgers right now? So I like the way he asks that question. they're bad, Sean. They're really, really bad. Let's see here. Russ wants to know, you can live 1 year in any city in the world, any year. Which do you choose?
Oh, wow. What a question.
It's amazing. Any city, any year. Like any city alone is like crazy.
I mean, you got that. I mean, it would take an hour to really to work that out. Don't you think? I don't, how in the world are you supposed to answer that? I mean, would you go like?
I mean, I don't know. Would you go back to ancient Rome? Like, would that actually your ancient Greece? I mean,
I don't think so. Because look, maybe, but like the realities of living in ancient cities are miserable,
terrible.
Right? There's no running water. There's no. I think you gotta assume that in order to have a fun experience,
right,
you need
right.
certain modern amenities. You don't want to go to ancient Rome for a year and live without air conditioning and running water, right? Like, it was probably disgusting. The realities of living in ancient cities was probably pretty gross.
I think
you're talking about like going to Paris,
right, during Hemingway,
you know, when
Hemingway.
Yeah, yeah, when or like when Picasso was around, right?
Right, right,
or,
right.
Or yeah, or you want to go to London when you know, when Shakespeare, maybe the only ancient thing I would do is I might go to London when like Shakespeare was writing plays or something. But even then, like,
yeah,
do you really?
That would be
that's really bad.
Water. That's pretty miserable.
That's really bad. Yeah.
Plus, you would find out all sorts of things you probably don't want to know. I mean, just like
yeah.
I don't know. You know. I mean, it's. How about
I think
LA,
you know what I think
like,
I would do.
Would LA be fun like in the old Hollywood days? Would that be fun?
Yeah, maybe. Although it was like crime ridden, it was run by the mob. I mean, I think here's what I'll do. I'm gonna go to Scottsdale, Arizona, in 1983.
that would be awesome.
That's I think that's your answer. Just go to Scottsdale. You know, you can play some golf. It's like, it's, you know, Reagan is president. Everybody's happy in America. There's no ISIS to worry about. You know, there's a little, like, Russia's crumbling. Like, Russia's a threat, but, like, they're crumbling. You know, we win the Cold War. I feel like that's what you do. You go to Scottsdale in 1983.
I'm going to Dallas in 2001. No.
There you go.
All right. David wants to know. No. Oh, here we go. Ross wants to know, what's the highest number you've ever counted to straight, starting at one?
I'm going to say I probably counted when I was a kid. I probably counted to 792 because that's the number of cards in a Topps baseball card set.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
I'll bet at some point I counted out loud 790 to make sure that I had every card in the set. That's my guess.
I like that. I would not have thought of the baseball card thing. That's just too good an answer. I can't top that. Because I was thinking something along the lines of maybe, not that I tend to do this, but I mean, maybe if you're counting, you know, to go to sleep, like counting sheep or whatever. I don't count sheep, but if you're just counting to try to go to sleep, you know, maybe you get up into the hundreds somewhere. But I think that's right. I probably have not, other than baseball cards, I don't think I've ever counted that much stuff, right?
Yeah. So,
yeah, I like that. That's actually really, really good.
All right.
Colin wants to know, what do you actually have for breakfast in the morning versus what do you really want to have breakfast in the morning?
I want to have the same thing for breakfast every morning.
Same
exact thing, which is 2 scrambled eggs, buttered toast, bacon, orange juice, and coffee.
Okay.
If I could have that's in my good place, in my actual afterlife heaven, that's what I have for breakfast every single morning. There's a couple problems with it. Number one, if you eat that for breakfast every morning, you'll die when you're 53.
Exactly.
Number two, I'm a vegetarian now, unfortunately, so the bacon is out. Well, those are the two main problems. So what I have for breakfast is I make myself a smoothie. I used to have, when I'm lazy, I have cereal because my son has cereal every day. So I have, I just have cereal. That's when I'm lazy. But when I'm not lazy, I make myself a smoothie. It's like a bunch of fruit, blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, whatever's around, an apple, a banana, whatever's around. And then I take a bunch of spinach and throw it in there. And then some cashews and some kind of like stuff like that. And I blend it all up and I drink it and it's delicious and I really love it. And it's like the best possible fruit smoothie, best possible substitute, because it at least is sweet and it tastes good. That's what I do.
Well, that's spinach.
Yeah, it disappears. You know, the spinach, like if you have a banana and an apple and like blueberries and strawberries, you don't taste the spinach, but you get the benefit of having eaten spinach in the morning.
Okay.
It's worth it. I'm serious. You can make spinach disappear into a smoothie pretty easily.
I'll give it a try and get back to you on that. Interesting. My ideal breakfast would either be what you just said, you know, maybe with a bagel on the side, or I really, really like French toast. I would love French toast. I eat, like, you know, when I don't skip breakfast, which I shouldn't do, I understand. I'm kind of like an egg whites and, you know, and just juice and, you know what I mean? It's just like something healthy-ish, you know, kind of.
A bummer breakfast. You're talking about a bummer breakfast. Yeah.
Bacon and an egg white. That's what I've
Yeah, huge, a huge bummer. A huge bummer of a breakfast. Yeah.
No, I would By the way, our that.
Our producer TJ has now informed us that we are more than an hour in.
Yeah.
And we made after last week. Last week's podcast was 3 hours and 31 minutes long.
Embarrassing. It was.
It was one of the longest ever continuous talkings ever recorded. And so we told ourselves that. we're going to stay to an hour. So we should probably wrap it up
soon.
We are
wrapping it up with two more questions.
Okay. More questions. Here we go.
Carl wants to know, if Tommy Pham mixes his peanut butter with the jelly, does that affect his standing as the podcast player?
Of course it does. Yeah. Well, how would it not? You're saying if a human being commits a horrible crime against humanity, are we still going to root for him in the same manner as we've been rooting for him? No, of course not. No, for good reason, we're going to castigate him and toss him under the dustbin of history.
we can only hope. We can only hope it's not true. That's all I'm going to say. We can only hope it's not true. Jonathan, with our final question, how are the Yankees going to ruin everyone's playoffs? They're going to ruin it, Jonathan, by winning the World Series.
By winning them. That's right.
That's exactly how they're going to ruin it. We all know it's true. We've been talking about it for the last week. They just are. Not only are they going to win the World Series, we know how they're going to do it. We've already like predicted scores for how they're going to do it. Who's going to be the hero? We've got it down. They're going to win the World Series.
First of all, they might win the East. They won tonight, and the Red Sox are losing 7-3 in the eighth inning. So they're going to be three games back with like 18 to play or 17 to play. That's an easily overcomeable margin for the Yankees, especially. Let's just say they are the wild card. They're the number one seed wild card team. The number two wildcard team is most likely going to be who, Joe?
The Minnesota Twins.
That's right. The Minnesota Twins have not beaten the New York Yankees in a baseball game since 1958.
That's right.
Don't look it up. It's just the truth. June 6, 1958. That it was the Washington Senators, of course, back then. But that's the last time that in a single game contest, the Minnesota baseball franchise has beaten the Yankees. So that's a given. They won't even start Severino if that is the game. They won't. They'll start and they'll skip to the point. They'll start playing the game like they have a 19-run lead in the eighth, and they'll start an outfielder. Clint Frazier will be the starting pitcher for the Yankees because that's how obvious it is that they're going to win that game. Then who do they play? They probably play Cleveland.
Probably Cleveland.
And it is exactly the kind of thing that the Yankees would do.
That's what they do. They ruin things.
They just ruin everything. So they're going to take this Cleveland team that's so fun, that's won 25 straight in September, that roared into the playoffs. The Yankees will just slowly throttle them. They'll win like 3-2, 1-0, and then 4-3 in extra innings. Yeah. And by the way, if you actually follow these Yankee games obsessively as I do, they score like five runs on four hits. It's like the other night, it was like single, walk, catcher's interference, walk, error, single, and they score four runs and they win the game. It is the most infuriating thing in the world. But it would be so Yankees to like knock off the team that is the most fun team in the league.
Oh, yeah.
And then once they get through Cleveland, you think the Red Sox or the Astros are going to beat the Yankees in the play? You've got to be kidding me. No, of course not. And then they're going to go, and then there will be some weird upset where, like, the Nationals beat the Diamondbacks knock off the Nationals and the Dodgers lose to the Cubs, and then the Diamondbacks beat the Cubs, and then the Diamondbacks are you kidding? They're going to go into Yankee Stadium and win game one of the World Series? The Diamondbacks? You think Paul Goldschmidt's going to save you? Forget it. It's a done deal. The Yankees are winning the World Series in probably five games.
Yeah, five games, I think. That's right. Yeah, thanks for asking that question, though, Jonathan, because we really appreciate you just bringing
it up. Look, you asked. You want to know how they're going to ruin everything? That's how they're going
to
ruin it.
They're
going
to
win.
We can give it to you. We can do it inning by inning next time if you want, because we know.
Yeah, we can break down. Absolutely. We can break down how, like, they almost blow a ninth inning lead in the second round against the Indians.
We'll tell you
because
exactly.
Ramirez ties up the game with a two-run homer, and the crowd's going crazy. And then they put together, like, a double. Clint Frazier doubles, and then, like, Todd Frazier pinch hits and like hits like an infield single and it's first and third. And then, Gardner strikes out and you have a little hope. But then, then it's going to be Chase Headley. It's Chase Headley. It's absolutely Chase Headley comes up and hits like a triple that like, that is almost
caught.
Yeah, like Austin Jackson almost catches it. He dives and almost catches it, but he doesn't. It bounces past him. And it's a Chase Headley two-run triple in the 10th that wins game two. And then the series is over.
Yeah, we can do this for you. We can do this whole thing. All right, time for one last meaningless thing to end this meaningless thing.
It's so raw. I don't understand why it's still so raw in me, this feeling. And this hatred, this like anxiety. It's so raw.
It's not going away. It's not. This team is going to just drive us insane for years to come.
It's one last meaningless thing to end this meaningless thing. We talk about sports and we draft things we know, like how beaches are terrible places to go. No hot fruit for Michael, more Diet Coke for Joe. The podcast woe. It's one last woe. Meaningless thing.
All right, one last meaningless thing to end this meaningless thing. Michael, your one last meaningless thing.
I recently changed all of my passwords.
Oh.
For all of my internet sites.
Nice.
Yes, it was a thing I'd been meaning to do for a long time. I recently did the whole thing, and they're not easy to break, my codes. It's not, you know, like my last name and then the birth date of my children or something. It's I take this seriously, and I did it. I came up with like good like random alphanumeric code for each of them that I recorded. And then that Equifax data breach happened.
Yeah, yep, sure did.
Where it was like the personal data and information of 7.3 billion people, 143 million people. And I was like, well, what is the point of any of this? But like that, we think passwords are protecting us from people hacking. I mean, they have all of the base information. They don't need the passwords. They have our social security numbers. And our like dates of birth and everything they need to do whatever they want. It's you get these reminders all the time. This is kind of a bleak one last meaningless thing, I guess. But you get these reminders all the time of like how much of a mirage it is when you're like, oh, don't worry, I change my password for this, you know, for Amazon every 3 months, so I'm safe. Like, no, of course we're not.
I have a friend who is involved somewhat, not on the negative side, but involved somewhat in this whole Equifax thing. And I said to him, I said, you know, this is ridiculous that a company that's their only job, right, is to, I mean, their only job is to sell our stuff. But their only job beyond that is to keep this data safe and to have it breached. And the guy said to me, and you want to talk about bleak, this is about the bleakest thing I ever heard. He said, it doesn't matter. Everything's available on the dark web. Every possible thing. If somebody wants to get information, they can get it.
I Great. Was
like, yeah, thanks. Thanks for that. So that's nice and depressing thing. My one last meaningless thing. Actually, I've got two. They're related meaningless things. So I was thinking about this the other day as I was driving. I believe that people who rubberneck on the highway or on roads, so they people that stop. To watch what's going on in an accident that is not blocking them, who are rubbernecking, should be punished very, very severely. I believe there should be a very, very severe punishment for those people. I believe that they should be punished to the fullest extent of the law for the rubberneckers who cause traffic jams that do not need to be caused. So that's my first thought, which is not necessarily an unusual thought. But then my second thought was, well, what do I mean by being punished? Because I don't want them to go to jail. I'm not saying they should be incarcerated or flogged or something like that, you know. So I think there should be another rail of justice where they find out something that you like and they just take it away from you. If you rubber.
So, like what?
Like if you're a golfer, okay, then like no, 6 months with no golf. That's it. It's like almost like a parent, like taking, like you're grounded. So that's it. It's like, you were rubbernecking, you've delayed all these people behind you by 25 minutes, no golf for the next 3 months. That's it. Just taken away from you. So I think there should be like a whole different version of justice for like these sorts of, because there are a bunch of them. I'm sure you have your own that annoy you. These little miniature crimes where people clearly are very selfish and do not care about anybody behind them or around them. They should be punished, but they shouldn't be punished in some horrible way. They should just have something that they like taken away.
Something sort of trivial, but just like ice cream or.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. No, it would never be anything severe. I mean, it should right. never be, you know, but just something like, oh, you know, I live for chocolate. Well, how about 2 weeks without chocolate? You know, maybe go to the next turn and make a left rather than cutting me off to take your left. And obviously this is a driving thing, but I think there should be this sort of punishment. I guess that's more government in our lives, which, you know, I know how people feel about that, but I don't care.
Well, I hereby support your candidacy as trivial punishment czar. in America where you get to decide what gets taken away from people.
Well, look, with the Equifax breach, we all know everything we need to know about people, right? So, I mean, at this point, it would be like, you know, I mean, like for me, I am sadly love gadgets. And so they would be like, no, 2 years, you can't buy a new gadget. You know, which I think would be a fair thing. I don't know. I don't know. And just really, all I'm really trying to say is stop rubbernecking. Stop it. Yeah.
That's maybe you could skip the whole complicated like the part about taking things away from people and just say politely ask people to stop rubbernecking.
No, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. By the way, that's not a bad thing in L.A. at all. The rubbernecking thing, that's not – L.A. is completely avoids that, don't they?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's not really any traffic problems
out here.
No
traffic out there, exactly. Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, we cut this thing an hour 15. That's not terrible.
That's not bad. It's still, roughly 65 minutes longer than it should be.
No, that's not true, because with the music we've added, that adds a whole nother layer of entertainment for our...
You're right. It shouldn't be 10 minutes long. It should be 12 and a half minutes
long. 12 minutes long. I think that's right. Yeah. I think that's fair. All right, Michael, as always, thank you.
Thanks for having me.